You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by HabsEyesOnThePrize.com.
The tournament is here. We're talking about March Madness, folks, and Bet Online is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contest out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket in real time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on all the action. And remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, game starts here.
And there you have it. I know we promised a Player of the Month pod last month and we didn't do it. Sorry for that. Not as sorry as I think Jared is, who's scribbling down all the data he can to pick a woman's player of the month. I have obviously thought it was going to be the Swedish woman that will play for Montreal next year, but he says she's ineligible. Jared, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. You know, if we had a European woman's prospect of the month, she'd be a shoo-in. So, but we don't have that yet. Maybe one day. Maybe one day you can do a woman's EPR, Patrick.
Well, that would actually mean I have to watch even more hockey. I'm not sure that Mrs. Seb would agree to that. And as you heard, Matt is here as well. Matt, how are you doing?
I am. I'm here to do more than just read the ad.
Yeah, and I mean, like you do a lot because you do the bottom 6 minutes. Are you still number one in Hong Kong?
I believe we are, right? And if we're not, we're coming for whoever's in number one. So watch your back.
We have a lot to talk about. It is the Player of the Month for March. And in Europe, the playoffs have started. Laval is on the verge of getting into that playoffs. And, you know, they might have gotten a player or two late into the season. We have Montreal, who just posted that Primo is their Player of the Month, and he is ours as well. Matt, can you describe why?
Well, I think, you know, he's still not 100% consistent, but the games that he played in the past month, more often than not, he was stellar. I think the finally getting away from that three-headed monster in the net has, and him getting that vote of confidence from the management that he wasn't the goaltender that was sent away, I think has done wonders for him. And you're seeing it in the net. He's had one off game out of the games that he's played, and the rest of the games, he's basically giving you starting caliber goaltender performances in each and every one of them. His movement in the crease looks incredibly efficient. He's almost Price-esque at times. I hesitate to even say that because I know people are going to say, well, you can't possibly compare him to Carey Price. I'm saying Price-esque at times with the way that he can make some of those tougher saves actually look quite easy. And I think he's giving you at least performances right now where you can say with a reasonable degree of confidence that as early as next season, we might have a goaltender controversy on our hands between him and Semyon Moldambo. Like, he's given him a run for his money in terms of the quality of his performances. That's why he's getting the Molson Cup, and that's why he's getting the nod for Player of the Month from us as well. It's just good performance after good performance. Again, one off night so far out of the games that he's played. Really eye-opening performances from him, and looking like maybe he's finally ready to establish a little bit more consistency in net, which has really been the main issue for him. Like, we've seen really good performances from him in the past. It's just been a matter of him stringing together multiple good performances. He did it in the playoffs with the Rocket de Laval, and now we're starting to see him do that with the Habs. So I'm frankly excited to maybe have a goaltender controversy next year, because this team looks like they're going in the right direction to be potentially competing for the playoffs. And if you got two goaltenders pushing each other and they're moving towards more of an even split between those goaltenders, I think it's good for the rebuild, and it's good for the team because they will not have to over rely on one goaltender to really steal the show night after night after night. And it's also going to be really good. Just so happens for the development of a young goaltender in Caden Primeau that seems like he may really have a future as a starting goaltender in the NHL. Time will tell. We know with goaltenders, it can be very up and down. You can have somebody who looks like they're maybe a potential starter, and then all of a sudden, year and a half later, they're very much not that. But So far, I think ever since that they moved away from that three-headed monster in the crease, he's looked great. That's why he got player of the month. And that's why he's got a lot of people excited about what this team might look like next season.
You mentioned a moment. That's been one of the things that people and experts in goaltending have spoken about, that he overcompensates. He doesn't stay in position. He slides out of position after making a move.
Yeah.
And that has really been honed in and maybe taken that security, because it becomes security, because the less you move, the more you will be in the right position. So it makes sense in that regard. You mentioned also goalies are voodoo, and we know that. Obviously, we've been low on Primo for quite some time. Just take a look on top 25, under 25. And then you have to realize there are a couple of goalies from behind him as well.
Yeah, it's kind of funny how quickly goaltending turned into a weakness long-term for this organization into a potential strength, right? Because Primo's emergence, Montembeau's emergence, but also, you know, we'll get into Jakub Dobiš, Jacob Fowler. Like, it's becoming... Yeah, exactly. Like, out of that group, there's going to be... I mean, we haven't even mentioned Quentin Miller as well, right? So the chances that there's a goalie of the future somewhere in this group is quite high. And if there isn't one goalie who can do everything and be, you know, that number one goalie playing 70 games a year, which I don't think there is, and I don't think that's the direction of the NHL either, there's definitely a couple in there that can definitely be part of a good goalie tandem going forward. So it's kind of funny how quickly this became a long-term weakness into a potential logjam of potential goalies.
Of course, it's Jared that brings in the money ball situation. You recreate them in the aggregate. They don't get on base, they stop puck. Also, Nick Suzuki, honorable mention, and I'm sure that, you know, Slavkovsky should probably be in mentioned as well.
Those are the stories of the month, right? I mean, the fact that this team is... This is basically a one-line team, right? Especially since Joshua Roy got hurt. No disrespect intended to Joel Armia.
To Matt Drake, who talks about Joshua Roy all the time.
Well, that too. But I mean, basically, this is a one-line team. And the fact that Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slavkovsky are still producing is a testament to how good they are. Because teams, let's face it, they don't have much to focus on when they're playing the Montreal Canadiens right now. And that line just keeps scoring. And I think it's a testament to them. And one of the best signs for this organization's future.
Yeah. Nick Suzuki's been... I talked about this in one of the BSMs recently. Career year after career year after career year. I mean, he's on his way to becoming an elite producer. And when I say that, some people tend to balk at the suggestion. And well, he's not elite. Is it maybe not right now? But just look at his production since he came into the league. He's done nothing but post career year after career year, which you need to note has been done on a team that has basically been in the midst of a rebuild since he came into the league. Even the year that they went to the Cup final, that was not something that was expected. That wasn't a team that was necessarily built to go that far. They came together and they had a magical playoff run that put them there. And outside of that, this team has just been in rebuild mode. So what Jared just mentioned about how this has been a one-line team and how there's not a whole lot for the other team to have to focus on, Nick Suzuki's been that focal point all throughout his years as a Montreal Canadian. Essentially, he's been like the top offensive guy basically since he joined the team, and still has gone year after year with career highs. He's going over the 70 point mark this year for sure, for the first time of his career. He's been flirting with that point per game mark. What's he going to do next year when they're actually able to ice a really good second line behind him? I've talked about this many, many times. I think the perfect second line that you can run, barring any major additions to the team, is going to be Kirby Dach with Alex Newhook and Joshua Roy. That's a potent second line that's going to give other teams something they have to focus on. What's Nick Suzuki going to do when that happens? So very, very, very worthy honorable mention. And then Juraj Slavkovsky, man. I was mentioning this the other night. You know, they get shut out by Carolina. The thing that stood out the most to me in that game of them getting shut out, other than special teams being a problem for the Habs, was Juraj Slafkovský. He was dominating the puck. He was absolutely dominating the puck. He was all over the place. He's, you know, he's deceptive with his head movement and with the way he's carrying the puck up ice. He's going around guys. He's getting into corners. He's winning puck battles. He looks like an absolute possession monster in a game where they got shut out by one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And for me, I'm watching that game and I'm going, man, if they can figure out the special teams issue, this is a team that could look very, very different next season. And those two guys are a huge part of it. And that's not even to mention Cole Caulfield, who I feel like has actually played quite well recently. He's been developing the playmaking aspect of his game. That line is going to be fantastic next year when they've got a better supporting cast around them.
Yeah, and you mentioned that playoff run. I mean, who led that team in scoring? Right, it was Nick Suzuki. So, he's really been quietly becoming a true number one center. And the things that he's been doing, despite having revolving cast around him, obviously this year he has a consistent line for pretty much the first time is in the last few years. But just great performance. And yeah, I think he's becoming, into that top, one center, number one center category. And the buzz he's getting around the Olympic team is proof of that, right? You don't make the Olympic team if you're not an elite player. And Nick Suzuki is definitely entering that conversation.
Yeah, and he might be an extra there. We got to be honest, right? But even being considered as an extra on Team Canada, that's a huge nod. You have to be extremely... Think the
players that's like being an extra for Sweden's defense.
Right.
Is it?
Exactly. Yeah. It is. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at least
I mentioned it before. I think the importance bit for Juraj Slafkovský was a bit of rest with the injury and then, doing his homework in summer. That is really paying dividends right now. I'm happy to see it. I was keen to take Slafkovský. Matt and I had that discussion as always when it's about draft picks and Europeans. I like the pick of Slafkovský and I'm happy to see it pan out. But I really keep thinking that, people forget that the draft summer is crazy for Europeans because of the flight across the Atlantic more times than a few, at least.
Yeah, and I was on Team Shane Wright at that draft, and I'm happy to sit here and eat some crow on that. I think part of the problem with, fans, analysts, scouts, pundits, everyone, is that people have this innate desire to be right about it, and to be right as fast as humanly possible. I don't think that we can claim 100% success on the Slafkovský pick just yet. Logan Cooley and Shane Wright both need more time, obviously. Shane Wright has barely played in the NHL. But as of right now, you can say with a reasonable degree of confidence that that Slafkovský was potentially the right pick. And I think the way that he's developing, Pat, you hit something very important, him doing his homework. We've seen all the videos of him staying after practice, coming early to practice, and working on his shot, working on his timing. That has paid huge dividends this season. Early in the year, he was getting opportunities to take one-timers and he would double clutch them, or he would come in and have an opportunity to take a shot. He would hold on to it too long. He would try to force a pass across into the slot or something like that. Everything he was doing was just a little bit off. It wasn't bad. It was just a little off. And he put in all that extra work, and now everything seems to just be clicking for him. And it's great to see. There's nothing I like more than a player who puts in the work and gets improvement as a result of putting in that work. He's going to get another full offseason. We got to remember, this guy just turned 20, right? He's going to get another full offseason. What's he going to look like next year, right? And same thing you could say for Nick Suzuki, is what's he going to do when they've got a better supporting cast around that line and other teams can't just key on that line all the time? He might be in for an explosion next year alongside Nick Suzuki, who might cross the point per game mark for the first time next season.
Looking to AHL, it was tough not to pick David Reinbacher, obviously, but it was easy in other ways to pick Jakub Dobish.
Yeah, I mean, he's really come into his own in the second half of this season, maybe even second third of this season. He's really, it's a tough adjustment, right? I mean, he's coming from the NCAA, and we see how long it can take players from the NCAA to make an impact. And he's basically being leaned on as this team's number one goalie and has been leaned on since the start of the season. Like, that's a lot of pressure to put on a goalie right away. I mean, it's not dissimilar to what happened with Caden Primo. But even Primo, when he joined the organization, they had Charlie Lindgren, they had Michael McNiven, they had players in the AHL to kind of ease him into it. And Dobish has just kind of been thrown into the fire. And like a lot of those players, it was those first year pros. And I think it's definitely making a difference for him with this. And the Rocket are in a playoff, you know, hunt largely because of him. If he wasn't as good as he's been, they would not be close. And so it's a nice development year for him. I still think that there's, you know, work to be done. You know, he's still really young, but a solid year and a great month. And he's really the backbone of that Rocket team right now.
And you touched on something earlier too, right, Jared, that out of all those goalies they've got, there's got to be one that can become that consensus starter. And with him coming on late in the season, it's kind of feeling like he could potentially be pushing for that spot as well. And I think there's nothing better for the Habs in terms of figuring out their goaltending situation than to have multiple guys vying for that spot, pushing each other to see who can become the best. So I hope that continues for him, man. I live for a goaltender controversy in Montreal over the next couple of seasons, because that'll mean that they're ready to take that next step for real, because they're legitimately looking at and they're trying to figure out who's the best option that we could possibly have to play all those key games for us. That's the best situation that they can have. And then again, you mentioned Fowler, Quentin Miller, they've got guys coming up in the ranks that it could get very interesting for them. They could even end up in a position like they are with their defense right now, where you're looking at it and you're going, all right, they got to trade somebody in order to maybe improve some other positions. So it's really nice to see them having a goaltender like him coming up through the ranks in Laval and starting to really prove himself a bit.
Jared Kaskisu, is he signed for next year with the Rocket, or is there an opening? Because I see on Twitter that people are asking Fowler to come in next year already. I think he should stay in NCAA, but it's a discussion to have.
Yeah, he's not signed for next year. He signed a deal for the rest of this season from his PTO. But yeah, no, he's not signed for next year. But yeah, I don't know if they want to go into a situation where Dubish and Fowler are kind of competing with each other necessarily right away. Let Fowler stay in the NCAA. I don't think there's a rush. I would, you know, obviously, you know, there's a lot of factors in play here with that. But I mean, I wouldn't necessarily rush for it. I mean, look, you look at someone like Lane Hutson, who really, you know, Lane Hutson, Cole Caulfield, you know, almost every NCAA player the Canadians have signed, they have waited that extra year, right? And I don't think there's anything to suggest they'll go in a different route with Fowler. I think that he can benefit more from a year at Boston College, which, let's face it, will still be a very good team next year. I don't think all those guys are going to make the leap, the Smith, Leonard, Perreault line, among others. So I think that there's, you know, there's no need to rush him over. But yeah, I don't think that Kaskisuo is going to be the one that's blocking him. There's a free spot for him if he wants it, but I don't think that's going to happen. A lot of the talk about Canadians prospects is get them over as quickly as possible. And Pat, you're no stranger to that, especially with the Europeans. But I don't think that there's necessarily a rush to get Fowler over. You know, they can take their time.
Yeah, and I think you touched on it. I think, you know, keeping Dobish, giving him the chance and having him rested behind and learning from an older pro is better development rather than having, you know, a goalie controversy in Laval.
Absolutely. I think, you know, Dobish started playing well before Kaskisuo signed with Laval, but his play has really taken a different level since they brought Kaskisuo to Laval. I think, you know, just from what I see from both of them, their personalities really mesh too. Like, Dobish doesn't have a YouTube channel or anything like that, but he's a very outgoing guy. He's a very personable guy. He's very confident, and I think that meshes well. And obviously, you know, they both have a European background as well, which kind of helps. They both came over to North America relatively early, and I think that it's. I mean, Dobish has been in North America since I think he was in high school. So you know, it's there's a lot there to suggest that there's a lot he can learn still, and I think that's key is having. I mean, you know, I mentioned it before, but that Lindgren, McNiven, Primo, three-headed monster is a good example of what downsides there are to that because there's only one net. And you look at what happened. Look what happened in the NHL this year with Montembeau, Allan, and Primo as well, right? Like, there's only one net for these guys. And I think that, you know, because they have the opportunity to leave him in Boston College, I mean, why wouldn't you? Why would you force yourself to kind of have a situation where you're sharing a net and you're looking at, you know, the most one guy can play, or the most both can play is like 36 games, right? Like that's the most that both guys can play. Obviously it's still more than the NCAA season, but I think that it's a little bit different. I think there's no need to rush Fowler over and put yourself in that position. I mean, it's possible if he has nothing left to prove and he's like, I'm ready to go, then you know maybe that changes the conversation a little bit. But I mean, I don't think there's a rush. And you know, like I said, look at what they did with Caulfield, Hudson, arguably players who had more success in their first year in the NCAA, and they both went back. So.
Yeah, I should note there that when I say I want to see a goaltending controversy,
you don't
I don't want
them.
To see them carrying three goaltenders on any of their teams anymore. I want to see guys pushing each other for the top spot. I don't want to see them having that log jam where guys have to sit around and barely play, right? That's not ideal.
Matt, first impressions of the new Austrian general shaped in the form of Prince Eugene, one of the best generals of all time, David Reinbacher. What do you think?
I got the chance to watch some of those Laval games since he came over, and I think he looks very, very calm, very poised back there. Obviously scored an absolutely beautiful goal in his first game. Just stepped up, toe drags around a defender, walks in and snipes it. I'm impressed by him so far. I think he's been quietly very good. I haven't watched as much as Jared or Scott has of Laval, but for me personally, I think he's looked very good, very encouraged at what he's been able to do so far. I think everybody knows he had a pretty tough year there in Switzerland on a pretty bad team. We were talking about it before we even recorded. Like, that's a team that would have, in all likelihood, been relegated if not for the fact that they got saved by the teams below them not qualifying to get promoted. So, it's good to see him come over and proving himself a little bit. I think he's at what, half a point per game. He's got 3 points in six games so far. That's a pretty darn good mark for a guy who's just coming in for the first time to North American hockey. And he looks to me like a guy that, he's adapting very quickly to the North American game, and that's good news. I'd be very excited to see him at camp next season and to see him and probably start with Laval, but I think the Habs camp next year is going to be very competitive when it comes to defensemen. He's a guy that could sneak in there as a potential surprise addition to the Montreal roster at the start of the season. We won't know until we know, but
You also have to take into consideration who can go down without passing through waivers, and
exactly.
Reinbacher is obviously one of those that can. So it's important to remember that. Going forward, though, into the North American junior side and NCAA side, Owen Beck gets the credit, 24 points in 13 games. He has points in every game in March. It's a fantastic stats when you look at it from that point of view. It's the kind of development we sort of mentioned on the Top 25 Under 25 podcast, being traded to a playoff team, getting the right surroundings, a little bit like David Reinbacher didn't get. But managing to take that step when you're given the opportunity is something that speaks volumes about his character. We know his character in regards to World Juniors, but it also shows that he has that offensive upside that we might have, overlooked because his defensive acumen is so strong.
That's what you want to see, right? Like, that's when you send guys back to junior, you want to see their offensive numbers pick up, because you know they're going to drop when they get to the NHL. So the higher potential they can get in junior, the more chance they have of scoring in the NHL. And I mean, yeah, I mean, he's been like dominant since going to Saginaw. Like he was good last year when he went to Peterborough. He's always been good in the playoffs, but I mean, just another level of you know, dominance with Saginaw. I mean, he had 30 points in 25 games with Peterborough. He is 51 in 32 games with Saginaw this season.
81 points in a month.
He's at 3 points per game in the playoffs through two games as well. So I mean, you know, I guess that's kind of okay, right?
I go more than okay. I mean, he goes to, like, Peterborough is not a very strong team this season. He was maybe their best offensive player. I mean, I'm not super familiar with Peterborough as some of the people there maybe are. So don't, you know, get mad at me for that. But for my money, I think he was like their best offensive player at the time. Goes to Saginaw, which is a much more offensively charged team, and all of a sudden you're seeing the points explode, right? And it's exactly what Jared said, right? When you leave a player back in junior, you want to see those offensive numbers go up. And we're seeing that with Owen Beck. So we're seeing more potential, and we already know what he can do defensively. So he's another guy. I would not sleep on him next year at camp to potentially sneak in there and really challenge for a roster spot. And I mean a roster spot in Montreal, not in Laval. I think he might be a guy who ends up following the Joshua Roy trajectory, where he goes to Laval for a little while, impresses there, and ends up earning a call up when an injury or something opens up a spot for him. But I really would not sleep on him to earn a spot right out of camp because of the abilities that he has defensively. We talked already about the Habs being a bit of a one line team, right? And we think, based on what we've learned so far this season, that they've got the pieces there for a really good second line as well. So what's open, right? The bottom six is still something that needs to kind of be built almost from the ground up. And Owen Beck is the kind of guy that slots in very perfectly to a role like that. He's got defensive responsibility. And now we could see that, yes, he's very capable of turning that into offensive numbers as well. So I am in most years when they're in like a rebuild or a retool like they are right now, I'm very excited for camp because I really think he's got an opportunity there to stake his claim to a lineup spot. And those offensive numbers mean that he's going to be able to show for them a little bit of ability to play up in the lineup when the need arises, right? So, you know, you get injuries during the season. You may need to take a guy from the second line move or the third line, move him up to the second. There could be opportunities like that for him. And him showing this offensive ability now with Saginaw, I think, makes it a little bit more realistic for him to do that. And again, all I want to say to people is don't sleep on him next year. He might actually challenge and take a roster spot out of camp, barring, of course, any major additions to the team between now and then.
Yeah, I think with Beck also, what you have to look at is, you know, his potential has pretty much been solidified in my mind. Like his likely potential is a middle six center, right? I don't think he'll ever, yeah, you know, touch top line numbers, or I don't think that's a realistic potential for him, at least when you're looking at it that way. But he's pretty much solidified himself as a middle six center, right? So, you know, you add him to the Dock and Newhook, and you know he's kind of like an elevated Jake Evans, I feel like, you know, where, yeah, you know, he can play, you know, Jake Evans can be like a fourth line center who can be a third line center, and Beck can be like, is like a third line center who can be a second line center if you need him to be. And I think that's and like you said, it's kind of a not necessarily a weak spot, but an open spot in this organization right now. And I think that, you know, it's kind of been, you know, Beck's been kind of like that guy since he's been drafted. It's like, okay, he'll be the number three center on this team. And I think that's really the outlook for him is that he can be that guy to just kind of solidify that middle six, that bottom six, and be a guy that can, you know, take some of those strong defensive minutes off of a guy like Suzuki as well, because I think Suzuki's been asked to take a lot of those minutes as well, you know, between him and, you know, Christian Dvorak at times, Jake Evans at times. And I think that he's just one of those guys you can circle in as being that guy to be kind of that homegrown guy in that spot. But obviously they're going to be making additions, right? That's kind of the second part of like this rebuild, right? It's getting the pieces in there, but also surrounding them. You saw it with, you know, Sean Monahan, and you know, he's probably the best example. Even a guy like Michael Matheson, David Savard, you have to surround these guys with the right veterans, and not just veterans, but the right ones. And I think that, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see what Ken Hughes does building this roster. But yeah, Owen Beck has probably alleviated most of the concerns people had with him, in that, oh, where is, you know, is the offensive upside there, you know, things like that. And the answers are resounding. Yeah, he can score. Like he can put up offense if he needs to. And yeah, it's a great month for him, great season for him. And that's going to be one of the things to watch as, you know, the postseason ramps up in the OHL and the CHL.
We'll be right back after these messages. Don't drop those eggs that you're preparing for pancakes now that it's a long holiday here on Easter. Looking to the honorable mention, though, and I actually thought it would be this guy that got the nod, Jacob Fowler, in order to have those three goalies from NHL, AHL into the NCAA. Cracking game the other night. I know you gifted some crazy saves in the Boston matchup, Matt. What did you see from Fowler there?
I would say some of the same things that I said for Caden Primeau, just really efficient movement in his crease. He made a save against BU that was just out of this world. If you haven't seen it yet, it's on my Twitter account at DrakeMT. Got to plug my own Twitter, of course. He's in his net. He's square to the shooter, but the shot comes in and gets blocked. And when it gets blocked, it trickles right out to the other side of the net. I forget who it was on BU, but he's standing there and he's looking at a wide open net, and Fowler has to dive across, drop his stick, and just stick his arm out and get a piece of it. And he manages to do it. I mean, BU was, I think a lot of people think Boston College is just the superior team in all aspects. And that may be true. They've got a lot of high octane offensive players, but in that game, I felt like BU was getting the better chances. And the big difference that gave Boston College their win, yes, their offensive players absolutely played a major role, but the big difference in making sure that game wasn't close enough for BU to come through and take the win and take the Hockey East title was Fowler. He was just excellent in the crease, you know, like I said, super efficient with his movement, never slides himself out of position. Constantly square to the shooters, and he just so happens to be capable of making those wow factor athletic saves as well. So there's a lot of reason to be excited about that kid.
We move across the pond into Europe, and consistency has been a thing we've spoken out on this podcast a few times in regards to Oliver Kapanen, but consistent is what he has been partly in February, but definitely in March. He, as we are recording this, leads the Liga playoffs in points. He's tied for goals, 10 points in total, 5 goals, 5 assists. He's been the anchor in the defensive zone. He's been the hub in the offensive zone. Everything that we have asked Kapanen to do seems to blossom into this playoff run that Kalpa is on, first beating Sport 2-0. And then going up to Ilves, that draws some comparisons to our favorite team to mock, the Leafs. Ilves, fantastic season, finished second to Tappara and blew it in the first round of the playoffs. They haven't won a title in 56 years. That's probably, you know, same time as the Leafs. So Kapanen, fantastic start of this playoffs. He's up against Tappara, obviously, in the second round, in the semifinals. And the question is, can Kalpa make an upset? That's the first stop. Second, can Kapanen continue his play? Because that is what we should look for. And what happens with Kapanen at the end of the season? What are your thoughts on that, Jared?
I mean, you know, it's tough for him because I think his rights expire this summer.
No, next summer.
Next summer. Okay, even better. Because I mean, with his contract extension, his contract that he has in Europe, that wouldn't be happening. So you know, his rights expire. So I mean, he's another guy that can jump right into that, you know, middle six, bottom six conversation. I mean, when you're a contending team or a team that's getting ready to contend, you need to have as many homegrown players on entry-level contracts on your team as possible. And whether that's Kapanen and Beck or, Vincent Rohr or any number of prospects that the Canadians have right now, you need those guys. And they might not be, difference makers or making the impact that you would necessarily would have expected when they were drafted. But they can still play key parts. And I think that he's really put himself on the radar, because I think he was dropping off the radar a little bit with all the new prospects the Canadians had. He was drafted the same round I just think there's a lot of chances for him to take that next step. And, who knows what the situation is a year from now. But definitely putting himself back into that conversation, because I think he was kind of the forgotten guy a little bit.
I mean, what we haven't mentioned here is obviously that his dad is the GM of Timrå in SHL. Rumor has it that Timrå wants him to play in the SHL next year. He was drafted in 2021, which means that his rights expire 2025. And you need to sign him before, I think, 1st of June in order to keep him, which gives Montreal a leg up in that discussion as well. We've seen other players do their 4 years in Europe, Lekkonen, Veidemo, etc., and still have an impact in NHL. So I wouldn't be against him moving from Liga, which is not the greatest league in Europe, into SHL, which is arguably one of the two best leagues in Europe, and Timrå, which has a young team and where he will get a top spot on either line, because many players are leaving for Switzerland on expiring contract, etc. So it's interesting in that regard. I always thought that this would be the year, this would be the summer that he goes over to Laval. That is obviously an option as well. I don't see him ready for the NHL. But what is the center capacity at Laval right now, Matt?
I mean, I think if you're talking middle six, bottom six, then I think that they would absolutely take anybody that they think could help. I don't think that they're going to be thumbing their nose at somebody coming over from within the organization that was already drafted if he performs well enough to make that a reality. I think, especially when you're talking about, like Jared mentioned, somebody who's kind of turned into a forgotten player, if his performance this season earns him anything, it's at least a look at camp, right? So I don't know, Pat, is he going to come over for camp?
He's coming over for development camp. I'm quite sure about that. His national service is done.
He's got a 100% shot.
That the regular camp is obviously when season starts in SHL. And I think he has to be signed as well.
I'd say if he comes to development camp and he's one of the better centers that they've got available, then I think they'll probably give him a deal and they'll probably give him a shot to go and earn his keep in Laval.
Well, that if he has his SHL contract, I don't think he can. NHL or bust or back to Europe.
More power to him then.
There you have it. It's an interesting conversation. I mean, we keep talking about, he's forgotten. He's been in the system for so long he's still 20. His birthday is
it's crazy.
Literally 29th of July. If he was born, a month later, a month and 6 weeks later, he would have been in the next draft. So he's big, he's strong, he's smart. His shot is getting there. There's a lot of upside to this player, and it might be a step too far to get into, if you get a third line position in Laval versus a first line, second line position in SHL, it might be a smart, development route to go down to dad in Sweden and play another year there before signing with Montreal and coming over that way. Really interesting prospect.
Finn's going to Sweden for a year in the SHL. It's worked out pretty well for Montreal in the past. I was going to say Lekkonen had more than 1 year, but it hasn't been a bad route for players. And look, it's a perfect measuring stick for Montreal too, right? I mean, Liga is not the strongest league. And so I think that, you know, him going to SHL, getting challenged a little bit more, is a good sign and a good indicator of what his actual upside is. Whether it's in Laval or Montreal or Europe or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, I say forgotten man, but it's no problem. It's like no fault of his own that he's in that spot. But that 2021 draft class,
looks pretty solid.
it's very interesting. It's intriguing. There's a lot of players in there that have overshot their draft projections so far, and I think that Joshua Waugh is the top of that list. But it's gonna be very interesting to see what he does. It's gonna be very interesting to see what Kapanen does, because I think that he does have that potential that that made him a second round pick in 2021. And I think that, even though he like you mentioned, Pat, he wasn't at development camp, so he hasn't been in the radar, and so it's gonna be very intriguing to see. I hope he comes over for development camp because it will really be, I think, his first chance at development camp, with everything that's been going on since 2021. So I mean, I think he probably was there his first year, but yeah, it's been a while, and I think that it's going to be good for this group. And when I say this group, I mean Kent Hughes, Jeff Gorton, this development team, including a certain Marie-Philippe Poulin, to work with them and see him at the development camp.
Two players that has outperformed their draft position are honorable mention in Europe. The first one is obviously Filip Eriksson, coming back from Nybro, having had an outstanding period in Hockey Allsvenskan, because Allsvenskan started today in Sweden, which is the football league. So that's why it's important to have hockey in front of it. Getting straight on to that second line in Växjö, in the playoffs, Växjö obviously going through 4-0 against Luleå. Eriksson still hasn't scored his first SHL goal. Got some good chances in those games that he did play. Really, really standout performance as well, especially considering the players that he mesh up with in regards to draft positions, etc. in Hockey Allsvenskan. And, a little bit of the forgotten prospect this year, Adam Engström. In order for Rögle to actually sweep the season champions, the league champions in Sweden, Färjestad, the last month and a half, really, Engström has played on his offside together with Brandon Davidson. And that has been the core defensive pairing for Rögle. Forgotten because he doesn't produce the same way as we all thought he would. He hasn't been given that kind of chance on the power play. But defensively, when I asked for him before the season, he has done everything but better. Defensively, he has become so solid that he is on that first defensive pairing in box play. He is the defensive support for the offensive players. And now with Brandon Davidson, he is the shutdown pair facing the toughest opposition in of their opponents. Really, really strong play. A little bit forgotten, Adam Engström. And we're going to go to you, Jared. So over to the ladies. We should really have started with the ladies. Ladies first, right?
Yeah, it was a tough month for this Montreal team. They've only won two games. They have a four-game losing streak as they enter April, and they don't play for a couple of weeks because the World Championships, and it's really an indication of the way the month went this month, that the player of the month is Marie-Philippe Poulin, despite only playing three games. She's the only player to have more than 3 points on the team. She had 2 goals, 3 assists in those 3 games. Got hurt in the third game against Toronto and has not played since. She's expected to play at the World Championship. She's expected to be back from Montreal at the end of this month as we go into the last 5 games of the regular season in the playoffs. But she had a really good month when she did play. And her absence was notable in why the team has struggled. Not the only reason. They did lose the last game she played 3-0 against Toronto as well. So it's not like her injury coincided with their struggles instantly. Honorable mentions, Aaron Ambrose had a goal to assist. Gabriel David had a goal to assist. Maureen Murphy had a goal to assist. And Laura Stacey had a goal to assist. Those are players that have really, you know, stepped up, scored some big goals for Montreal down the stretch. Haven't been able to get a win in the last four games, but those are some honorable mentions. And obviously a big one, we mentioned her off the top, but Lena Lundblom had a tremendous month.
Tremendous season, you know, getting, really.
Yeah, tremendous season, but a tremendous month getting to the final of the women's SHL with Modo. She has her rights with Montreal for next season, so she can sign if she wants to play in the PWHL, which all indications is she does. But you know, there've been discussions, but no signed contract as of yet. They can't sign contracts for next year anyway, until the end of the season. But I would expect her to be in Montreal next year. She's going to be representing Sweden at the World Championships as well. So lots of things to look for from Montreal perspective in the PWHL and in Women's Worlds that start this week.
Yeah, and Lena obviously was given the Players Award for Best Player in SDHL, and even the Journalist Prize for Best Players in the SDHL was given to Lena. So, you know, and
she was the first Swede to win that award, right? If I'm not mistaken, Pat?
Sorry?
Or she... There was one award she won that she was the first Swede to win.
Yeah, I think that was well. the best player award, right?
Yeah.
From players themselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah, incredible season for Lena. Someone to look into with the upcoming Worlds. Is it Wednesday it starts, Jared?
Yeah, it starts April 3rd. There's kind of scattered. So the tournament starts April 3rd. But I think Sweden plays Denmark that day, if I'm not mistaken. And then Canada's first game is the 4th.
Since it's been a goalie pod, we have to give a shout out to an old Montreal Canadian prospect, Frédéric Dichau, keeping a clean sheet in the 7th game in the relegation series and making his HV71 winning the title or earning promotion or keeping up in the top league. You've been listening to Jared Book and his analysis of women's hockey in particular. Along with everything else that he does so well. Matt Drake of Bottom 6 Minutes fame and a top podcaster in Hong Kong when it comes to hockey, at least. And me, myself, and I, Patrick Bexel, here when, you know, we have a Game 7 coming tomorrow in Finland. We have a Game 7 on Wednesday in Sweden. It's playoff hockey here.
This episode was brought to you by Bet Online.